As an area of low pressure shifts to the east across the Great Lakes, weak high pressure is bringing sunny skies and dry conditions for today. By this evening, however, another low pressure system will move in from the northern plains, bringing another round of showers and thunderstorms into the region late tonight and into tomorrow. The system will move out of the region by Sunday morning, leaving Mother's Day dry with partly cloudy skies and temperatures in the low to middle 70s. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny with a high of 68 and a west wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 50. The wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms are likely in the morning. There's a chance for showers and thunderstorms during the afternoon. Look for a high of 68 and a wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low of 52 and a light southwest wind early. After midnight, the wind will be out of the north. Sunday, partly sunny with a high of 72, the wind from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunday night and Monday, mostly cloudy. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low Sunday night in the mid-50s. Expect a high Monday in the mid-70s. Monday night, mostly cloudy with another chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low in the low 60s. At noon Central Time, sunshine was reported across the two states. In Rockford, 65 degrees. O'Hare, 66. In Bloomington, Mattoon, and Carbondale, 63 degrees. At South Bend at the top of the hour, 61. At Lafayette, it was 64. Indianapolis reported 62 degrees. And Terre Haute, 64. Willard Airport reported a mostly sunny sky. At noon, the temperature 63, the dew point 52, the relative humidity 67%, the wind out of the southwest at 9, the barometric pressure 29.95 and falling. And at 12:39, 64 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The state of Florida has almost 3,000 assisted living facilities. The state was among the first to regulate assisted living and to adopt a Bill of Rights for residents. An investigation by the Miami Herald and NPR member station WLRN found that regulators are failing to protect some residents. They uncovered dozens of questionable deaths in Florida's assisted living facilities. Kenny Malone reports.
Aurora Navas spent her life terrified of water. Yet in 1962, she put her three kids by themselves on a Pan Am flight out of Fidel Castro's Cuba. She sent her husband by a boat a year later. It took five more years before she could get her flight over the Straits of Florida and reunite the family in Chicago. Aurora Navas worked 13 years on an assembly line at a transistor factory there. She helped pay for a vacation to Miami Beach, where she watched from the sand in fear as her kids played in the ocean. She never forgot those 6 years she lost with her kids.
As a matter of fact, she still referred me as baby, the baby, Nene.
Alfredo Navas is the youngest of Aurora's three children. After Aurora's husband died in 1983, she retired to Tampa to be near Alfredo. He visited every day, but as his mom got older, he had to hire extra help.
Just to keep an eye on her and make sure she took her medication, she didn't leave the stove on, she was still cooking. She was a strong bird.
When she was 83, doctors diagnosed Aurora with Alzheimer's disease. She wound up at Isabel Adult Care 3, a 6-bed assisted living facility in southern Miami-Dade County. Isabel Adult Care has fancy sconces, a covered walkway, an elegant stone facade, and sits right on a lake. The first time Alfredo Navas visited, he noticed the lake.
They had like a little chain link fence. I did see a surveillance camera. You could see the alarm on the door, and there's always a person there. Everything seemed fine.
A Miami-Dade police report describes what happened on January 27, 2008. Around 3:45 in the morning, Aurora Navas got out of bed. She put on her light blue house slippers and shuffled out of her room. She walked past an unplugged surveillance camera. She wandered out a back door with an improperly set alarm. She shuffled through the unlocked back gate. Two on-duty caretakers failed to stop her. That night, Alfredo Navas woke up to the phone ringing. It was his older sister.
She told me that there had been an accident at the nursing home and that mom had passed away.
Police found Aurora Navas's left slipper lying next to the lake. They found Aurora Navas drowned in 18 inches of water. It's one of 70 questionable deaths uncovered during a year-long investigation by the Miami Herald and WLRN into the state of Florida's assisted living facilities.
Angel Hoglar, 71, killed when left in a bathtub of scalding water.
Herald investigative reporter Mike Sala reads from a list of deaths culled from thousands of state documents.
Gladys Horta, 74 years old, strapped so tightly the restraints ripped into her skin, causing a blood clot that killed her.
We found deaths from residents being deprived medications and from residents being over-medicated, deaths from Miami to the Florida Panhandle, deaths in 100-bed facilities and in 6-bed facilities.
Walter Cox, 75 years old, Alzheimer's patient, wandered away from a facility for the fourth time. His body was found torn apart by an alligator.
In almost all 70 cases, there were few or no consequences for caretakers. Florida once led the nation in legislation policing assisted living facilities, but our investigation shows the state has fallen behind in enforcement. As the U.S. population ages, Florida is a case study for how the country protects some of its most vulnerable citizens.
Isabel's here, though?
Our reporting team showed up at one of five facilities owned by Isabel Lopez. She owned the place where Aurora Navas drowned.
He's saying park.
All right.
Isabel Lopez walks into the driveway with her three-legged dog named Ron, or Rom in Spanish. I ask her in broken Spanish if she remembers Aurora Navas.
¿Tú sabes Aurora Navas?
Estuvo conmigo en mi facility.
Aurora Navas murió en su facilidad. ¿Por qué?
Porque hubo un accidente.
Lopez maintains the death was an accident. She says she doesn't know why the alarm didn't work the night Navas died. We have more questions, but the language barrier makes it too difficult.
Todo yo te lo explico con un traductor conmigo.
Lopez asks me to call back the next day with an interpreter. When I do, she declines through the interpreter to answer any more questions. There's one Florida agency charged explicitly with overseeing assisted living facilities and investigating deaths like that of Aurora Navas, the Agency for Health Care Administration, or ACA. 2 weeks after Aurora Navas drowned, Isabel Lopez reported, "We found that all procedures were followed. The facility has door alarms, proper door locks, and a fenced backyard." An ACA spokesperson said the agency has no records of the case and refuses to comment on whether it pulled the police report. If it did, the agency would have read what we saw about the surveillance camera, the missed set alarm, and the unlocked back gate. The Navas family sued Isabel Lopez in civil court for wrongful death and settled for an undisclosed amount. Their attorney was Michael Filer, who specializes in bringing cases against assisted living facilities in Florida.
On close examination, you see facilities with clearly inadequate living conditions or improperly trained staff or improper oversight. And essentially what you end up with is basically a bunch of small warehouses for the elderly. And I find that troubling.
As the industry has expanded, ACA's staffing has stayed the same and has faced its own budget issues. Our investigation found ACA is doing fewer inspections, taking longer to follow up on complaints, and rarely punishes facilities to the full extent of the law. In 2008 and 2009, ACA found enough violations that, according to its own rules, would have let the agency strip licenses from at least 70 facilities. The state closed just 7.
Well, my first reaction is that ACA is not doing their job.
Nan Rich is the Democratic minority leader of the Florida Senate. She says our investigation shows the state is headed in the wrong direction.
So we need to go back and figure out how to make sure that the statutes are actually followed and enforced, and maybe there need to be stronger ones.
ACA declined a request for an in-person interview. In an email, the agency said shutting down a facility is, quote, a very harsh penalty. In each case, ACA says it considers the gravity of the violation, actions taken by the owner to correct violations, and the potential emotional and physiological harm created by removing residents from their home. ACA would not comment specifically on the death of Aurora Navas, but it did add, "We are sympathetic to Mr. Navas regarding the loss of his mother." Nearly every facility owned by Isabel Lopez has a documented history of problems. The police have had to use bloodhounds and a helicopter to search for runaways from Lopez's facilities. ACA itself has found 119 different violations over the past decade, but the only disciplinary action ACA has ever taken against Isabel Lopez was in 2009, a $1,500 fine for not complying with Medicaid laws. Alfredo Navas can't understand why ACA never followed up on his mother's death.
So what does ACA do? It's just a paper pusher. Somebody just died, you know, and if they're not applying the laws and fining or closing these people down, then what are they for?
In her original incident report to ACA, Isabel Lopez wrote, "All precautions were taken so that an occurrence like this would not happen. But it did happen. And without ACA enforcing its own rules, there's no governing body to prevent deaths, like the death of Aurora Navas, from happening again." For NPR News, I'm Kenny Malone in Miami.
The hundreds of tornadoes that swept across the southeast last week inflicted death and destruction. The impact will be felt for months, even years, as hard-hit communities struggle to rebuild and local economies work to recover. Huntsville is one of Alabama's economic hubs, and it took a direct hit. NPR's Alex Kellogg reports.
It took a week, but most schools reopened yesterday in Huntsville. Still, many people are spending their days doing the little things to help with the recovery effort.
Now you're getting a hot dog.
Okay.
Robert Schumann is the general manager of the Firehouse Pub. He was grilling hot dogs, hamburgers, and chicken for scores of civilian electricians working to restore power to Redstone Arsenal, a massive army post.
People will ask, what were you doing when all this was going on? And we know what we were doing. We were feeding some folks, doing our part.
Redstone is the center of testing, development, and support for the Army's aviation and missile programs. It is also one of Alabama's largest employers, with about 36,000 workers. More than 1 million customers lost power during the storm, and 100,000 still don't have electricity. So the Army post has been running on generators like this one. But officials say they expect to have full power restored in the next few days. Colonel John Hamilton says that's good news, as any longer delay may have had an impact on the post's support of military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, and at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, which is supporting an upcoming NASA shuttle launch.
We talk about normalcy, and and one component of that is, is Redstone Arsenal running normally in terms of the way the work is being done, and we'll be able to get back to that very, very quickly. What will take a very long time to return to normalcy are people's lives.
It's still impossible to get hard numbers, but the economic impact on this part of Alabama, and frankly the state as a whole, is expected to be massive. Huntsville is the state's second largest metropolitan area. According to its Chamber of Commerce, it accounted for roughly 40% of the new jobs created in the state in the past decade. Rick Davis is the director of Cummings Research Park, which he says houses roughly 300 companies and boasts 25,000 high-tech jobs. Most of the companies in the research park, including Boeing and Lockheed Martin, were shut down for the better part of a week.
You've got companies that lost, days of operation. You won't get those days back. So we'll have to see how that part of it plays out. But there's going to be a pretty severe impact.
Huntsville wasn't the hardest hit part of the state, but the damage here was still severe. Nevertheless, things are starting to return to normal. Huntsville straddles two counties, and blanket curfews in both were recently lifted in areas not hit by the tornado.
6-12-10.
On Wednesday, Deputy Sheriff Jeremy Hughes patrolled several subdivisions in the Huntsville suburb of Harvest that were ripped apart by a tornado. Dozens of homes here are torn to shreds. Even old oak trees are turned upside down.
For people that live in non-affected areas, life is